Welcome back to the North Carolina Reading Service. Your readers today are Bob Krueger and Gene Latshaw, and we'll begin the second hour of news and information from the News and Observer, New Bern Sun Journal, Greenville Daily Reflector, and the Wilmington Star News. And now we'll begin with a look at what's on the television tonight.
And first, I would like to thank Spencer Hoke for being our sound engineer today. He's doing a great job, and we appreciate him being here. On TV this evening, ABC brings us a new and season finale, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And then we have a season finale of Claim to Fame from 9 till 10. CBS has a new Big Brother from 8 till 10, and then The Real CSI Miami is new at 10. On Fox, it's a new Master Chef tag team, Storms of Brewing, from 8 till 10 o'clock. And then, of course, we have the 10 o'clock news live. On NBC, we've got America's Got Talent quarterfinals 3 results, and that is new and live at 8 o'clock. And then at 9, Toby Keith, American Icon, is new, and that runs until 11. On ION Network, it's our typical Wednesday evening. It's Blue Bloods night. You've got episodes at 7, 8, 9, and 10 o'clock. On PBS, Nature, at 8 o'clock, The American Ocelot. And then at 9, a new Odysseus Returns, and that runs all the way till 11. MNT brings us Dateline. And if you like Dateline, that's you're in for a nice evening, because there are 8, 9, and 10 o'clock. On CW, Sullivan's Crossing at 8 o'clock, followed by Police 24/7 at 9, and then two new national desks live at 10 and 10:30. On A&E, it's Court Cam night. Beginning at 7 o'clock, they are every half hour with new court cams at 9 and 9:30. Then we switch to My Strange Arrest at 10 and 10:30, and those say they are both new as well. On AMC, The Shawshank Redemption, the movie from 1994 starring Morgan Freeman, Bob Gunton, and Tim Robbins. This runs from 8 o'clock till at least 11. That's as far as my listing goes. Then on BET, Tyler Perry's Sistas at 8, another Sistas at 9, and then a new Ms. Pat at 10, and another Ms. Pat at 10:30. On Disney Channel, Aladdin is on at 8 o'clock. That's the movie from 1992, starring voices of Robin Williams, Linda Larkin, and Scott Winger. That runs till about 9:40. And then we've got something that's abbreviated, but it's about zombies. And then at 10:05, we have Primos, and another Primos at 10:30. On Discovery Network, Expedition X at 8 o'clock, a new Expedition X at 9, What Lurks in Loch Ness, and then Expedition Bigfoot is new at 10. On ESPN, it's the 2024 U.S. Open tennis match, second round, and that is live, beginning at 7 o'clock, I believe, and runs till at least 11. On Nickelodeon, Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie from 2020, starring Jim Carrey, Ben Schwartz, and James Marsden. It begins early, about 7 o'clock, runs till 9:30. And then we've got episodes of Friends at 9:30, 10, and 10:30. On TNT, it's Rogue One, a Star Wars story. This is a movie from 2016, starring Diego Luna, Alan Tudyk, and Felicity Jones. It runs from 8 o'clock to at least 11. And last, on USA Network, Law & Order Special Victims Unit. There's one at 7:30, and then one at 8:30, and one at 9:30, one at 10:30. They've changed their times. And those are your TV listings for this evening.
And this is the time in our broadcasting we share with the obituary index of this morning's paper. And here's the way we'll try to do it. We get name of the deceased, then the age that's listed, the community in which they resided, the date of death, and the name of the funeral home that's helping the family with arrangements. And we start today with Lena Bailey, who was 95, from Selma, died on the 20th, Parish Funeral Home. Price Baldwin Jr., 81 of Garner, died the 26th. Carlton L. Gray. Edward Lee Bidding, 84 of Goldsboro, died the 24th. Seymour Funeral Home. Doris B. Caswell, 88 of Mount Olive, died in the 23rd. Tyndall. Caleb Cates, 87 of Durham, died in the 24th. Clements Funeral Service. Thomas Boyd Clark, 83 of Rougemont, died in the 25th. To Sessamon Funeral Home of Oxford. Richard Cogley, 84 of Raleigh, died in the 24th. Montlawn Funeral Home. Geraldine Conley, 85 of Durham, died in the 23rd. Clements Funeral Service. Jerry Crumpler Jr., 80 of Kenley, died in the 26th. Kenley Funeral and Cremation Service. Shirley Daniels, 84 of Havelock, died in the 21st. Munden Funeral Home. Cora Holloway Edwards, 85 of Goldsboro, died in the 25th. Seymour Funeral Home. Jackie R. Evans, 74 of Anger, died in the 26th. The Lee Funeral Home. Earlene Everett, 87 of Farmville, died in the 25th. Farmville Funeral Home. Darlene Shepherd Few, 86 of Raleigh, died in the 25th. Rich and Thompson of Burlington. Wilbert Garrett, 93 of Durham, died in the 23rd. Scarborough and Hargett. Chris Cutter Goodman, 57 of Cedar Island, died in the 20th. No funeral service. Christine Tyne Herndon, 88 of Durham, died in the 15th. The Hudson Funeral Home. Frederick Hopewell, 61 of Swansboro, died in the 24th. Munden Funeral Home. And Arneel Leary, 24 of Raleigh, died in the 24th. Lee Funeral Home. Dawn Legger, 86 of Chapel Hill, died in the 21st. Enswell Funeral Home. John Lynch, 66 of Nashville, died in the 25th. Richardson Funeral Home. Carolyn Louise McLam of Rougemont, died in the 25th. Hudson Funeral Home. James Allen Neal, 59 of Henderson, died in the 21st. The Richardson Funeral Home. Randy Nevels, 64 of Stem, died in the 25th. Hudson Funeral Home. Patricia Pake, or Pike, that's P-A-K-E, 81 of Beaufort, died in the 25th. No funeral home. Marion Russell Pipkin III, 67 of Goldsboro, died in the 24th. Seymour. John Porth, 64 of Durham, died in the 20th. Enswell. Susan A. Price, 65 of Clayton, died in the 25th. McLaurin. Joanne Margaret Randolph, 88 of Apex, died in the 25th. Apex Funeral Home. Patsy Sykes, 64 of Creedmoor, died in the 24th. Assassin Funeral Home. Dream S. Baby Dream S. Tuck of Oxford, died in the 16th. Betts and Sons Funeral Home. Tooele White, 62 of Otway, died in the 25th. And no funeral home. Krista Williams, 60 of Hillsborough, died in the 15th. Answell. Elizabeth Williams, 65 of Hillsborough, died in the 21st. Answell. Grace Williford, 94 of Farmville, died in the 25th. Farmville Funeral Home. Patricia Willis, 85 of Beaufort, died in the 25th. And no funeral home. Donnie Warmneck, 81 of Raleigh, died in the 25th. Montlawn Funeral Home. And Sharon York, 73 of North Venice, Florida, died in the 23rd, the No Brooks Funeral Home. And we send our condolences to the families of all these folks we've just written.
Several announcements today. First up, in observance of Labor Day, the North Carolina Reading Service office and studio will be closed Monday, September 2nd. Our offices will reopen and then live broadcasts will resume Tuesday, September 3rd. Meanwhile, we ask you please have a safe and happy holiday. The North Carolina Reading Service invites you to attend our biggest fundraiser of the year, our New Visions Gala. This year, we're celebrating 41 years of service to people who are blind and print impaired. This special event takes place on Friday, September 13th. That's coming up fast. From 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Crabtree Marriott in Raleigh. Join us for a fun-filled evening featuring a cocktail hour, dinner, silent auctions, music by Barber and Hinton, and special guest speaker, April Hoke. Tickets are $150 a person. Please RSVP by September 6th. For more information and to purchase your tickets, please call our all-purpose number, 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you there. Tactile tours for visitors who are blind or have low vision are available at the North Carolina Museum of Art. These docent-led tours explore the museum's collection through audio description, tactile experiences, and by engaging the senses. Tours are by request only, and so you have to schedule a couple of weeks in advance. To schedule your tactile tour, please call 919-664-6854. That's 919-664-6854. North Carolina's Assistive Technology Program is hosting its annual Assistive Technology Expo. That's Thursday, October 3rd, at the North Carolina State McKimmon Center in Raleigh. The expo is open to the public at no charge and features more than 40 assistive technology providers and vendors from across the state, as well as 6 presenters on topics ranging from universal design and smart home technologies to artificial intelligence in assistive technology and speech communication. For more information on the NCATP Expo and to register to attend it, visit the NCATP website, and that is at ncdhhs.gov/AT Expo. E-X-P-O. Have you gotten your free currency reader yet? The Department of the Treasury's Bureau of Engraving and Printing is now providing a free currency reader to all eligible blind or visually impaired individuals. The device is small, compact, and runs on a AAA battery, which is included. To use the currency reader, simply insert a U.S. bill into the reader and press the button. The device will tell the note's denomination. To request your currency reader, fill out an application form, which is available to download by going to www.bep.gov. That's Boy Elephant Paul.gov. It must be signed by a competent authority, such as a doctor, who can certify your eligibility. Then simply mail it to the address on the application. Once the application is verified, a reader will be mailed to you at no charge. For more information about the U.S. Currency Reader Program, again, www.bep.gov, or you can call the toll-free number 844-815-9388. That's 844-815-9388. You are listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, connecting people who are blind and print impaired to each other, their families, and communities by delivering news, information, and entertainment using the latest audio technology. In addition to using specially tuned sub-channel radio receivers, NCRS streams our programming on our website, ncreadingservice.org. You can listen by using the Listen Live streaming audio player located at the upper right-hand corner of our website pages. If you have an assistive technology device, such as Alexa or Google Home, just say, "Tune in NC Reading Service," to listen instantly. We also provide podcasts of over 50 magazines and other information and entertainment programs following the initial broadcast. Please visit our website, ncreadingservice.org, and click on the Listen tab and then click on Skip to Podcast section. For more information about the North Carolina Reading Service, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.
And now here's a story from the Greenville Daily Reflector. Forum fields calls for improvement in Pitt County's animal services. Residents at session seeking feedback on Pitt County Animal Services said an experienced, engaging directors needed to transform spiraling operations at this department in the county's shelter. The Pitt County Animal Services Advisory Board held two meetings last week to gather suggested expectations for a new director and input on services and programs needed within the department and the county animal shelter. More than 60 people attended sessions held August 20th and Thursday. There are excellent ideas for the public about things we can do to enhance animal services, as well as the idea that this is a massive priority for citizens in the county, said Charlotte Ann Alexander, chairwoman of the advisory board. We want to meet their expectations, but also really focus on animal welfare in a meaningful way. The effort comes after the closure in May of Spay Today, a private nonprofit organization that provided low-cost spay-neuter services for residents and the shelter. It also follows the June resignation of Director Chad Singleton, who was later arrested on fraud charges relating to securing equipment for a volunteer fire department. A number of speakers urged the advisory board and the county officials to offer vouchers to help pet owners pay for spay neuter services at local veterinary clinics. Jamie Markham of Farmville cares for feral and community cats and has successfully trapped, neutered, and released 282 cats. She's been successful because the town of Farmville has provided funding for her work. Markham says that is why a voucher program is needed to help pay for fixing feral and community cats, especially since Spay Today is closed. Cindy Dixon, who cares for 53 feral cats, said the loss of Spay Today has been devastating. She currently has 23 cats that need to be fixed and three that are pregnant. Tricia Farvel also volunteered at the shelter for 2 years, taking dogs for walks and participating in other activities. She believed the shelter was responsible for the Spay Today's closure, saying requiring 30 surgeries a day overworked the veterinarians. Spay Today officials say trouble keeping vets led to the closure. Farvel said it's upsetting to know that the shelter does have to euthanize dogs and cats when space is limited. She recommended reducing the adoption fee to increase adoptions. Several other speakers also appeared to hold the county government responsible for space closing, prompting Pitt County Manager Janice Gallagher to explain the organization's relationship. The county has no authority over the organization's decision to close, she said. In past years, when Spay Today struggled, the county increased its financial support and discussed reducing the number of surgeries, only to be told the amount was based on the board's business model. Pitt County is continuing to work with Spay Today's board to determine what can be done to continue services and use the space, which is located next to the animal shelter on County Home Road. Gallagher said the county has contracted with a veterinarian to continue altering pets adopted from the shelter. The county also is exploring the licensing and logistical requirements to provide spay-neuter services to the public. Danielle Lohman, a manual spay today's board, said the organization tried to find a new veterinarian but couldn't locate one. Lohman said newly graduated veterinarians can't be hired because they need additional training to be certified to perform a large number of surgeries each day. During discussions about the new shelter director, participants painted a picture of someone who would vitalize animal services and its role in the community. Farvel said the new director should have at least 6 years of experience in shelter operations and grant writing experience. Several people wanted the county to hire a grant writer, but Dixon said training an industry staff member would be less expensive. Tabitha Murray, a member of Pitt Friends, an organization that fosters animals surrendered to the shelter, said the new director should give staff credit when it's due, should be active in the daily operations of the shelter, be open to constructive criticism, should not show favoritism, and clearly communicate expectations. Communications also include praising both staff and volunteers. The new director also should listen and allow team members to speak up and follow through with promises. Finally, Murray said the new director should be uplifting, accountable, and adaptable. Janet Hofstetter, a supporter of several local animal welfare agencies, became involved with the shelter after teaching the daughter of another director and adopting the most special of the 7 cats I have adopted over the years from the shelter. That led Hofstetter to pitching in whenever the shelter and Pitt Friends need something. I saw it as an opportunity to thank them for their tireless work and, of course, my special cat, she said. She's focused on helping other rescue groups in recent years because it feels like Pitt County Animal Services has fallen into a black hole. My last involvement was Christmas holiday 2022. I participated in their Silent Night foster program, then a series of small things that happened when it was time to return the cat left me disappointed, she said. The new director needs to get information about the shelter's good deeds in the community through an increased social media presence. Previously, a volunteer would post photographs of happy owners and their new adopted pets and provide updates on the adoption rates. Whoever's hired, I wish them the best. We have a top-notch facility, probably one of the best in the state. When the shelter is running well, it benefits its purpose. That is, of course, it is the homeless animal population at Pitt County, Hofstetter said. Bob Earnhardt said he was surprised to learn there's a differential in what is spent on cats and spent on dogs. He hopes that he heard wrong. The new director needs to have some kind of advocacy for cats, Earnhardt said. Markham said the county, not just the new director, should focus on staff retention and training. Several speakers said the shelter is currently closed to the public on Saturdays and Sundays, which they believe discourages people from adopting from that location. And this was written by Ginger Livingston of the Greenville Daily Reflector.
Also from the Reflector, your August 28th community news. Here's what's coming up. And, of course, anytime you have your own event, you want to have them advertised, you want to email it at least a week in advance to the word community, C-O-M-M-U-N-I-T-Y, at reflector.com, R-E-F-L-E-C-T-O-R.com. All right, let's see what we've got up next. Collard Festival, the 50th annual Aden Collard Festival, will be held September 5th through 7th in downtown Aden. The event will include a parade, live bands, rides, vendors, a collard eating contest, and more. No pets are allowed at the festival, only service animals. For more information, you can visit the AydenCollardFestival.com. I'll spell it. AydenCollardFestival.com. Pierce Spillman Fellowship. The Pitt County Democratic Party will hold the 102nd Pierce Spillman Fellowship from 4 to 7 p.m. September 6th in Fountain, featuring state and local party officers, candidates, and an evening of fellowship and food. Tickets are $25. Ticket and location information are available at secure.actblue.com. That's secure.actblue.com. Then click on donate and then look for Pierce Spillman. Family Therapy Celebration. The East Carolina University Marriage and Family Therapy Program and the ECU Medical Family Therapy Doctoral Program will host a fundraiser to celebrate their accomplishments and the longtime impact of Jennifer Hogston, who played a pivotal role in shaping the success of the programs, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. September 7th in ECU's Harvey Hall. Proceeds from this event will fund a new scholarship, the Jennifer Hodges Fund for MFT and MedFT. For more information or to register, email, I'll just spell this, L-A-M, maybe it's not an L, it might be an I, I-A-M-S-O-N-A at ecu.edu. A book signing, Peace Presbyterian Church, 301 Guinness Drive in Winterville, will host Reverend Jim Wallace on September 7th from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Reverend Wallace will be speaking and signing copies of his latest book, The False White Gospel. The event is open to the public. Visit the church Facebook page at call 355-2273 or email office at Peace Presbyterian Church for more information.
Let me see if the board went out. Mm-hmm. No, you're good. I don't know why the sound is out. Is we'll keep going.
Is it the monitor?
No, you're good.
Next up is Women's Day. Haddock Chapel FWB Church, 1548 Ivy Road, will celebrate Women's Day at 11 a.m. on September 8th. Eldress Alana Freeman will be the guest preacher. Elder Robert Wilder is the pastor. Then a golf tournament. Delcor Inc. will host its annual Teed Off at Cancer Golf Tournament from 8:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Thursday, September 2nd at the Greenville Country Club, 216 Country Club Drive. The tournament supports Riley's Army, a charity organization that supports children with cancer and their families during cancer treatment and raises pediatric care awareness. A community baby shower. The Mary Health Caritas North Carolina Wellness and Opportunity Center will hold a community baby shower for expecting parents and new parents from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. September 14th at 1876 West Arlington Boulevard in Greenville. The event will feature food, games, prizes, and resources for new parents. And a widow's luncheon. Faith Assembly Church's Widows Divorced Ministry is hosting a free Widows Empowering Widows Luncheon from 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. September 14th at Rustic Rose Hall at Home Place Events Venue, 3815 Emma Cannon Road in Aiden. The event will include a meal, fellowship, and encouragement. You can register by going to www.faith-assembly.org and then look for events, and I'll spell that, www.faith-assembly.org/events.
And from the Newman Sun Journal, the town of Maysville expands downtown redevelopment project with additional funding as construction begins. The town of Maysville has announced an expansion of its downtown redevelopment project with an additional $87,500 and grant funding from the Rural Economic Development Grant. This brings the total funding for the project to $937,500. According to a Tuesday press release, the town has acquired the properties at 502 to 508 Main Street and will use these funds along with additional contributions from the town to ensure the successful completion of the transformative initiative. The project will revitalize those spaces into a dynamic mix of commercial and residential units, according to the town. The first floor will feature high-quality spaces for retail, restaurant, and professional services. In contrast, the second floor will provide residential workforce housing specifically targeted for town employees and local teachers. The additional funding is a testament to the importance of this project for the future of Maysville, said Maysville Mayor Wayne Saland. We are committed to seeing this redevelopment through to completion, and we believe it will be a cornerstone to our efforts to boost the local economy and improve the quality of life for our residents. The IMEC group is set to begin construction immediately with an anticipated completion date of February 21st, 2025. The town of Maysville will continue to approve updates as the project progresses. And no one from the Sun Journal staff was given credit for this story.
Another from the New Bern Sun Journal, the past is present with New Bern's time travelers at the Historical Society's annual Ghost Walk. Tickets for the New Bern Historical Society 34th Annual Ghost Walk went on sale August 26th. Now in its 34th year, Ghost Walk is a family-friendly fall event that combines spirits from New Bern's past, local volunteer actors, historic sites, and a creative environment. For three evenings in October, participants can step into a time machine and visit with ghosts of New Bernians from the 1700s up to the mid-20th century. Spirits, specters, or ordinary folks will bring tales from across New Bern's history. The 34th Annual Ghost Walk is scheduled for October 24th through 26th from 6 to 9:30 p.m. at 13 ghost sites in historic New Bern. Guides will lead participants through the stops in Cedar Grove Cemetery and hear lively stories based on real historical characters and events straight from New Bern's founding. Participants can also see some special guests creeping through the cemetery during their visit. The remainder of the event is self-guided, with historical spirits telling participants about their spirited tales on porches in downtown New Bern. Local historic churches offer a variety of low-cost meals for Ghost Walk visitors. Tickets for the New Bern Historical Society's Ghost Walk are good for all three nights and are available at newbernhistorical.org. I'll spell that newbernhistorical.org. And then look for Ghost Walk. Or here's a number to call, 252-638-8558. That's 252-638-858. Or you can check in person at 511 Broad Street. Beginning October 2nd, tickets will also be available at both New Bern Harris Teeter locations and Mitchell Hardware in downtown New Bern. Adult advance tickets are $20 with a special $16 price for active duty military, students, and Historical Society members. Tickets for children under 12 are $5 and children under 3 are free. Adult tickets the day of the event will cost $25. So it pays to plan ahead. And this piece written by the Sun Journal staff for the New Bern Sun Journal, but not attributed to any specific author.
And now from the Wilmington Star News, a gated community where you can live out on your RV, Brunswick could see one soon. Plans in the works to bring a new kind of gated community to Brunswick County. This resort community would blend RV sites with permanent structures called casitas to allow residents to live partly in the RV and partly in an unattached accessory building. The Brunswick County Board of Commissioners learned more about these plans during its meeting on August the 19th, and here's what we know. The community would be called Carolina Coastal Motor Coach Resort. It's a small, family-owned company, and one of the owners, Barry Poole, noted they have built five other motor coach resorts there in Virginia, the North Carolina Mountains, and Florida. Now, this won't be a campground. What we do is a little different, Poole explained. It's motor coach only. They come in, and they can have a pad with utilities and everything for the motor coach. In addition, there will be a casita, or unattached accessory building. Poole noted that the structure they build is different depending on the location, but they're about 1,200 square feet. It's been a cabin in the mountains. It's been a casita in Florida, Poole said. Poole noted that in many motor homes it will stay for 6 or 8 months at a time, and you can't have guests in a motor coach, he noted. This allows family and friends to come and visit, essentially serving as a guest house. It also serves as an extra kitchen, which is important when you're a motor coach for 6 months, Poole added. The RV sites, casitas, will not be for rent. Poole explained their business model includes ownership. We sell those lots. They own them individually, he said. And while most use their RV lots and casitas seasonally, people noted there are some who use them year-round. The casitas will be stick-out. Poole said the cost to build them runs about $300 per square foot. And we get a permit, just like anyone else explained. Everything is built to code. The community is slated for land off of Cedar Grove Road. The property once served as a rock quarry. It includes a lake, and Poole noted the land is already cleared. Poole stated the resort will be a homeowners association to help cover the costs of amenities, which will include a clubhouse. The resort is still in the early stages of development. At its regular meeting on August 19th, the Brunswick County Board of Commissioners approved an amendment to the county's Unified Development Ordinance to allow for RV casitas. The amendment includes provisions stating neither the RV nor the accessory building can be rented separately from the other and must be used as a single rental. Brunswick County spokeswoman Megan Kakasic said Poole has not submitted plans to the county staff, and once those are submitted, they'll go through the technical review committee and then to the Board of Adjustment for a special use permit. And this is written by Renee Spencer of the Wilmington Star News.
And also from the Star News, what's happening on Labor Day weekend in Wilmington? Well, several things, of course. While the number of visitors should drop off after Labor Day, if anything, the number of local events will increase once the beach no longer beckons quite so insistently. At any rate, there's tons of things to do, and this holiday weekend with theater, comedy, film, and plenty of music. Let's see what's up and what's going down. Okay, all weekend, the 39 Steps. August 29th through September 8th at Thalian Hall, the Studio Theater, Big Dog Productions presents this whirlwind of a play, which it last staged in 2016, based on the John Buchan novel that Alfred Hitchcock adapted for his 1935 movie. It's a love-mocking celebration of old-timey thrillers with actors playing multiple roles, quickly reconfigured set pieces, and rapid-fire costume changes. The play is also a love letter to the ingenuity on a budget spirit of community theater. 7:30 p.m. shows August 29th through 31st and September 5th through 7th. Also, 3 p.m. shows September 1st and 8th. For info, call 910 632-2285, 910-632-2285. Shining City, August 22nd, which is already ongoing, through September 1st at North Front Theater, New Wilmington Company Sear Theater, makes its debut with this acclaimed play by Connor McPherson. Set in Ireland, it's about a man racked with guilt who goes to see a therapist after seeing what he thinks might be the ghost of his dead wife. Tony Elias Chufani and Brandy Simmons direct, and the play stars Chufani, Maya Noor, Brenda Carter, and Riley Callahan. 7:30 shows August 29th through 31st, 2 p.m. shows August 31st and September 1st. Tickets are $17, $22, and $28. Sam Talent, August 30th and 31st at Dead Crow Comedy Room. The rare stand-up comic who's also a novelist. None other than Mark Maron praised his 2020 book, Running the Light, about a disgraced touring comedian. Colorado's Sam Talent is one of the most talented joke writers in the biz. Great material about his size, which is large, and awkward social situations. 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. shows August 30th and 31st. Tickets $20 and $30. Friday only, Carolina Beach Boardwalk Blast, August 30th. On the Carolina Beach Boardwalk, Swan Song of this year's summer-long Pleasure Island Concert and Fireworks Series features the main event, playing beach music and rock, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m., August 30th. Fireworks on the beach strand start at 9 p.m., and this all is free. Peter Rowan with the Sam Grissom Project, August 30th at UNCW's Keenan Auditorium. Veteran bluegrass player Rowan teams up with the son of longtime collaborator David Grisman for his concert paying tribute to Old and In the Way, a band Rowan and David Grisman shared with Vassar Clements, John Kahn, and the Grateful Dead's Jerry Garcia. 8 p.m., August 30th. Tickets start at $44. For information, call 910-962-3500. That's 910-962-3500. Also August 30th at Greenfield Lake Amphitheater, American Aquarium. North Carolina country rock band has been playing Wilmington since the days of the old soapbox downtown. They return this weekend in support of a new album, The Fear of Standing Still, produced by Shooter Jennings, son of country legend Waylon Jennings. Opening act is the fabulous Watson Twins. 7 p.m. August 30th. Tickets start at $33. Friday Night Live, August 30th, at the Pier at Port City Marina, downtown Wilmington concert series held right on the Cape Fear River. Headliner is Aerosmith tribute band Pandora's Box. 7 p.m. August 30th. Tickets are $10. Gary Louder and Smokin' Hot, August 30th at Town Center Park, Ocean Isle Beach. Beach and pop music band brings this year's Ocean Isle Beach's summer concert to an end. Chairs allowed, but no smoking, vaping, or pets. 5 p.m. The gates open for a 6:30 p.m. show. This is at 11 East 2nd Street in Ocean Isle Beach and is free. Then on Saturday, we've got options. Steve Earle, August 31st at Greenfield Lake Amphitheater. Veteran country rocker known for such hits as Copperhead Road comes to town in support of his latest album, Alone Again, live. 7 p.m. August 31st. Tickets start at $53. Peter Pan, August 31st at Thalian Hall, a special screening of this classic 1953 Disney animated film will feature a very special guest, Margaret Carey, who was the human model for the cartoon character Tinkerbell. After the screening, Carey will conduct a Q&A with the audience and do a post-show meet and greet. This is at 1 p.m. August 31st. Tickets only $10, and it's free for ages 12 and under. For information, call 910-632-2285. That's 910-632-2285. Heavy Temple, August 31st at Reggie's 42nd Street Tavern. Touring doom metal band from Philly will melt your face and make you like it. Opening act is Valley of the Sun. The 7 p.m. August 31st show. Tickets are $18. Shelby Smoke, August 31st at the Sand Spur. Wilmington singer and author. His compelling memoir, Bleeder, centered on growing up with hemophilia, released his new single, Dancing, August 16th on Wilmington's Fort Lowell Records. It's a soaring musical slice of indie rock goodness. With opening act Bird Strike, this 7 p.m. August 31st concert is free. Lawn Enforcement, August 31st at Jimmy's. Wilmington rockers will be delving into their whole entire catalog to play every song they've ever written at this Wrightsville Beach show, including bangers from their 2023 album Blood, Sweat, and Shears, and recent singles Dust Storm, Say Hello, and Believe You. 8 p.m. show, there is a cover charge at the door. The Main Event Band, again, August 31st, this one at Middleton Park Amphitheater on Oak Island. Final show in this year's Oak Island Concert Series features the Main Event Band playing popular covers from a variety of genres. Blankets, lawn chairs, and picnics are allowed. 6:30 p.m., August 31st, and again, free. And then on Sunday, September 1st, at Greenfield Lake Amphitheater, longtime country music star Marty Stewart has played with such legends as Lester Flatt and Johnny Cash, and is known for his hits, including This One's Gonna Hurt You for a Long, Long Time. 6 p.m., September 1st. Tickets start at $44. And Fins Up Festival, September 1st. At Waterman's Brewing, festival celebrates the music of the late Jimmy Buffett, with bands including the Motos and Captain Mike and the Shipwrecked, plus water sports exhibits and a tribute to the 125th anniversary of Wrightsville Beach. 2 to 10, September 1st. And this by John Staton at the Wilmington Star News. Bob?
And back to the News and Observer. That's a lady you just hit, sir. Singer Scotty McCurry halts the concert to call out a fan. Garner native and American Idol alum Scotty McCurry went viral on social media this weekend after stopping his concert to help a woman allegedly assaulted by her boyfriend. McCurry was in the middle of his sold-out performance at the Big Gar Arena in Pueblo, Colorado on Saturday night when the incident occurred. The concert was part of the Colorado State Fair, which began Friday and will run through September the 2nd. A video posted by KFDA News of Amarillo, Texas, captured McCurry saying, "Right here, that's a lady you just hit, sir." McCurry stops playing and then says, "Absolutely not. Who just hit the lady?" A post on X by a concert goer captured another angle of the incident. Scotty McCurry stopping his show at the Colorado State Fair because some scumbag hit his girlfriend, the post reveals. Good for you, Scotty. Videos from the concert show McCurry did not resume playing until a man was escorted from the venue. McCurry, 30, shot to fame after winning the 10th season of American Idol in 2021. The Garner High School graduate was inducted into the Grand Ole Opry in April and joined the North Carolina Music Hall of Fame last year. A spokesperson for the Colorado State Fair confirmed the alleged assault. Colorado State Fair security assisted with crowd control, she wrote via email. This incident is still under investigation and we cannot comment further. However, the Colorado State Fair is asking people to send additional videos or images of the incident to security at csf.security@state.co.us. the spokesperson said. A publicist for McCreary said via email Tuesday that he would not be commenting on the incident. And this was written by Alexandria Solomon of the News and Observer.
These North Carolina cities are among the most desirable places to live, U.S. report finds. North Carolina is one of the most desirable states and boasts three of the nation's top cities to call home, a new report finds. Charlotte, Raleigh, and Winston-Salem all rank among the country's most attractive places to live. North Carolina cities also made their mark in other categories in the rankings from the real estate website Clever. Here's where they landed. Charlotte, at number one among the most underrated cities. Raleigh at number four among the most underrated cities. Charlotte at number two among the friendliest cities. Raleigh at number six among friendliest cities. And Charlotte at number seven among the prettiest cities. To create the list, Cleaver said it conducted an online, or Clever said it conducted an online survey of 1,000 U.S. adults from June 14th to 16th. Each respondent answered 25 questions related to where they live, which areas of the U.S. they prefer, and what they believe makes a city or state desirable, Clever wrote in an August 5th report. In addition, we examined the migration data from the U.S. Census at the state and metro levels to determine which states and cities Americans are moving in and out of. When considering the nation's 50 largest cities by population, Charlotte ranked number two, and Raleigh was the number sixth most desirable. And among mid-sized cities, Winston-Salem landed at number six, a Clever spokesperson told McClatchy News in an email. The top-ranked destinations might not come as a surprise, given North Carolina as a whole ranked as the sixth most desirable state. In the past, North Carolina cities also have been named hotspots for people ranging from recent college graduates to retirees, McClatchy News reported. The most recent results come as survey respondents shared which factors helped them determine the best places to live. Lower crime, affordable prices, and pleasant weather top the list. Also in the rankings, Charlotte reigned supreme on the list of underrated places that leave visitors pleasantly surprised. Charlotte offers the best of both worlds, an affordable cost of living with an expanding array of amenities, making it a hidden gem compared to more well-known but pricier urban centers, the spokesperson wrote. Some North Carolina cities also ranked among the prettiest places to live and those with the nicest people. But they didn't fare as well when it came to having the best food, scoring just about average in that category. Overall, rankings show the number one place to live in the United States was Tampa, Florida. And this piece written by Simone Jasper at the News and Observer.
Can you get a ticket for driving with a pet in your lap or in the truck bed in North Carolina? For most pets, car rides provide an opportunity to get out of the house and enjoy some quality time with their owners. But an easily excitable pet can become a distraction while driving. In these cases, using leashes or cages can help keep energetic pets under control and ensure your focus remains on the road. Does North Carolina have a rule that prevents your pets from sitting in your lap in a car or riding in the bed of your truck? Well, here's what the state law says. Pets like dogs and cats do not have to be restrained in North Carolina, so you can't get a ticket for driving them in your lap. Master Trooper Christopher Casey with the North Carolina State Highway Patrol told the Charlotte Observer. But state law requires them not to be distractions while riding in a vehicle, according to Wilmington-based Woody White Law Firm. Drivers also need to realize that animals become flying projectiles in the event of a rear-end collision or a rollover that could result in severe injuries to the animal or the people in the car, Casey said. A bill introduced in the North Carolina House that would make it illegal for anyone to drive with a live animal in their lap was withdrawn in 2017, the News and Observer previously reported. Representative Garland Pierce, a Democrat from Scotland County who introduced the bill, said some pet owners didn't like it, and he also heard from a group of military veterans who told him that some vets travel with service animals who can detect signs of a stroke. The animals have to be kept close while driving. Can dogs ride in the back of pickup trucks in North Carolina? Since there's no state laws that require pets to be restrained in cars, dogs are permitted to ride in the back of pickup trucks, and you can't be ticketed for it, Casey said. Representative Greer Martin, a Democrat from Wake, introduced a bill that would make it illegal for dogs to be transported in the back of pickup trucks last year. The Winston-Salem Journal reported the bill stalled in the House. There are only six states that have laws that ban the transportation of pets in truck beds, according to Michigan State's Animal Legal and Historical Center. Data shows the practice can be unsafe for dogs. Thousands of dogs in the U.S. die every year when riding in truck beds, either from wrecks or jumping out of vehicles, traveling at high speeds, according to Motor Biscuit, an online source for automobile information. And this was written by Evan Moore of the Charlotte Observer.
We have time for one or two shorties here. Pedestrians struck and killed by a train east of downtown Durham early Tuesday. A pedestrian was hit and killed by a freight train east of downtown Durham Tuesday morning, according to Durham police. The man was hit by a Norfolk Southern train near where South Alston Avenue meets East Pettigrew Street at about 5:20 in the morning. He was taken to a hospital where he later died, according to police. Police have not released his name or said how they think he came to be hit by the train. They're still investigating the crash. As of 8 a.m., East Pettigrew Street was closed at intersections with South Driver, South Plum, and Ramsar Streets. The cross streets in South Alston Avenue remained open. This by Richard Stradling at the News and Observer. On this date in history, Richard Wagner's opera Lohengrin was performed for the first time at Weimar, Germany in 1850. In 1955, while visiting relatives in Mississippi, Emmett Till, an African-American teenager from Chicago, was murdered in 1955 after allegedly flirting with a white woman. His death catalyzed the civil rights movement. On this day in 1993, the spacecraft Galileo took pictures of the asteroid Ida. And in 2020, American actor Chadwick Boseman, who had iconic roles in such movies as Black Panther, died from colon cancer at age 43.
And this broadcast is generously supported by the Orchard Group at Morgan Stanley. We thank them for their contribution. This program is available as a podcast at NC Reading Service.